Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For this week's Images of the Past, we welcome Gary Enright. He's director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer, South Dakota. Gary, welcome back.
Thank you very much, and good day to you.
Good day to you. It's always great to hear your voice. For folks who don't know, you can find images and the story of whatever you hear on Images of the Past every week on our website, sdpb.org/imagesofthepast. And this week, Gary Enright, we talk about the United Nations and its connection, or the people who hoped that it would have a connection to South Dakota, right?
That's right. And it, as a matter of fact, it was seriously considered as a location for the United Nations. The United Nations actually was formed in October of 1945, and they really were seriously looking for a world headquarters. Mm-hmm. And President Franklin Delano Roosevelt even wrote a letter to our congressman at the time, Francis Case, telling him that the suggestion that the Black Hills of South Dakota be a possible headquarters for the United Nations was being seriously considered.
Do we know where it started, whose idea it was originally?
Well, the actual idea came from a resident of Rapid City who had lost a son in World War II. His name was Bellamy. And he actually was the one that said, you know what we need? We need a place in the Black Hills where the world will be at peace. Mm-hmm. And he seriously pursued the opportunity of getting the world headquarters of the United Nations here. He had the governors of Wyoming and Nebraska and South Dakota all signed on to the project, and they did put out brochures and communications and publicity, and they really worked very hard.
I want to talk about some of that, but first, for people who are just sort of dismissing the idea as, you know, impractical, there are some really interesting sort of, you know, thematic reasons to do this. What were some of the arguments for why this would be a good idea?
Yeah, exactly. And, well, there were two that stand out. One was that the brochure that these folks put together showed a map of the world, sort of a cutaway map of the world, showing that the Black Hills was actually the center of the Earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the place where it is almost equal miles from every continent in the world and to the Black Hills, and that was one of the reasons. The second reason was having to do with our Native American people. They recognized that the Native Americans had called this place and their tribe the Dakotas, and Dakota in the Sioux language actually means an alliance of friends, and they use that theme to promote this as a good place to have an alliance of friends from all over the world. Or now that the world wars are over, we're going to have peace forever.
And give me an idea of how the conversation sort of played out. Who writes a letter to whom? You know, where's the paper trail of this history?
Well, there was a very, rather colorful brochure produced with a lot of pictures of the Black Hills. And the idea was, of course, promoted by our congressional delegation and by the governors. And one of the things that came about during this was that Edward R. Murrow, who was the famous CBS newsman, once said, maybe people would think more clear and straighter in the Black Hills of South Dakota than any place else in the world. Well, what an endorsement.
Right.
But
I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah. And in the end, it finally boiled down to who had the most money to promote and to offer the site. I'm not so sure that the governors of the three states had put up a lot of money behind building a World Peace Center, is what they wanted to call it. But it finally boiled down to multimillionaire John D. Rockefeller, who owned a big chunk of Manhattan, New York City property, and he gave the United Nations six blocks of Manhattan real estate free of charge, just simply gave it to them if they'd put the United Nations there. And that's how it wound up in New York City.
Did we have challenges with transportation at that point? How were we sort of set up to welcome people from all over the world? Would it have been overwhelming of our infrastructure?
Yeah, it was. They sort of wrote that off as not being too important at the time. But the publicity did point out that we had three major railroads running across South Dakota and Nebraska into the Black Hills. And so they were using that as part of the attraction. They also said we had an excellent highway system. Well, it was, and it wasn't, because we didn't have the interstate highways until the 1950s. So in the mid-40s, we had just the regular old two-lane highways. But they did brag about having one of the world's most modern military air bases, and that was Ellsworth Air Force Base. And that people could fly in from all over the world and use that facility. So they were actually promoting what we had. And interestingly enough, they bragged about the fact that over 1 million people a year visited the Black Hills. Well, that was right post-war period of time. Now, of course, it's many times more millions who visit the Black Hills every year. But at the time, there weren't too many tourist sites in the country that could brag about having 1 million people a year.
So do you see, is this mainly an economic push for the people who are really pushing it, or maybe I'm romanticizing it, they had an altruistic reason for wanting this to happen?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of romantic power behind it, although they simply said that this is one of the most peaceful places in the world. And in fact, probably it was at the time, compared with European countries and other places around the world. I think they took it seriously, the people who promoted it. They wrote letters and influenced people. They had three state, federal, or national legislative leaders to, from South Dakota and North Dakota, or excuse me, and Nebraska and Wyoming to sort of push for this. And they took it seriously right down to the time that Rockefeller announced that he was giving away millions and millions of dollars worth of land in New York City. And that's what really put a stop to it.
So here's my next question, and it has to do with saying this is the most, one of the most peaceful places in the world, certainly a peaceful atmosphere, but not a peaceful history.
That's true.
As we tie in this notion of, the tribal name of Dakota, an alliance of friends, do you have any indication in your research that would say how tribal people and tribal leadership felt about this conversation?
Well, I've searched quite a few documents in trying to put together all of the details of the story, and I find very little except for that one single reference that had to do with an alliance of friends. They use that. I'm not so sure that that they called upon the leaders of the various Indian tribes in South Dakota to promote this. Given the very sincere patriotism demonstrated by Lakota people and Sioux Indian people and other Indian tribes across the nation, they were probably the most ardent patriots during World War II. There was no question about that. We learned that when we talk about their code-talking contribution to the war effort. The Native American people were extremely patriotic. And I have a feeling that if they were called upon, their contribution would have been very positive.
What can we find? And again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest, Gary Enright, 1881 Courthouse Museum Director in Custer. You can find all this at sdpb.org/images-of-the-past. And Gary, what all can they find on that website? You have some letters as well, or a letter.
Yes, well, we have some letters from the three governors, which actually outlined five different highlights. One of them, it's convenient because it's in the center of the world, so to speak. The three sovereign states are cooperating. That was those that I named. The states invite the United States to be a part of this whole effort. There is no large city to absorb the capitals, the world peace capital, they called it, to absorb their identity. In other words, it would stand out. It wouldn't be just another big building in New York City. Hmm. And they said that there was no racial, religious, or nationalistic controversy in the Black Hills. So that was a very strong statement. And, you know, and today we look at those kind of things and says, ooh, I don't know about that.
Right.
You know? But in fact, they did. They pointed these things out, and this letter was distributed worldwide.
Yeah. They're pointing it out in a slightly different context than maybe we would view it today.
I think so, yes. I have a feeling.
Gary Enright, your posts are always so fascinating. Anything else that I didn't ask you that you want to leave us with about this particular time in history?
Well, just one of the things, one of the letters, the letter that we have a copy of, that's going to be on the website, is from Franklin D. Roosevelt, who wrote to Senator or then Congressman Francis Case of South Dakota, telling him that the suitability of the Black Hills is going to be seriously considered. He wrote that letter 4 days before he died.
Mm.
The letter is dated April 7th, 1945, and, of course, the president died on April 12th.
A remarkable piece of history once again. Gary Enright, thank you so much for your time, as always.
You're welcome, Laurie. Thanks.
You can find that all at sdpb.org/images of the past.